Welcome to Intersect, where church meets culture.
I'm Betsy Desch, and I am joined, as always, by my husband Josh, the perspicacious Josh Desch. Do you know what that word means? Because I didn't.
Nope, I do not.
Okay, so I'm going to read this, guys. This is your vocab word of the day. Perspicacious. Google says, having a ready insight into and understanding of things.
Oh, cool.
So I would describe you as perspicacious.
I like it.
Yeah,
I like it.
It's a good
word. We are here in the studio in lovely Columbia, South Carolina, and we thank you for joining us. Today, we have a heavy topic, but it's a very important topic. Mm-hmm. People need to be aware of this. And within our lifetimes, I think we're going to continue to see movement in this area. So here's the title of today's episode, A Bridge Too Far, Assisted Death in Canada. Mm-hmm. Now, Bets, we need to go ahead and let our audience know that this material is not suitable for everyone.
Yeah, we recognize that this is a really difficult topic for many of you. Mm-hmm. For many listeners whose lives have been forever changed by the realities of suicide. So we just want to approach it really carefully and just take care as you listen.
Exactly. Parents, think about if you have kids in the car, different ages, use your wisdom, of course, in terms of who it would be appropriate to listen to this topic. But the reason that we wanted to jump into this question of assisted suicide is there was a piece in The Atlantic, the magazine, written by David Brooks. And Bets, please let our audience know what that piece was about.
Yeah, it's entitled The Canadian Way of Death: The Nation Legalized Assisted Suicide and Exposed the Limits of Liberalism. So we want to talk through that article and what David Brooks brings to this discussion. But just to lay the groundwork, we need to talk about what the law is in Canada, and how it's changing and kind of what are some of the issues that have arisen through that process. So there's a law in Canada, it's called MAID, which is an acronym, and it stands for Medical Assistance in Dying. It came into being in 2016. A court case was decided that year criminalizing the assistance of another person to commit suicide violated the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. So that was how this law came into being. It was decided through a court case. So I'm quoting here from David Brooks's article, and he's going to help us understand what the law is. So as originally conceived in 2016, the MAID program was reasonably well defined. Doctors and nurses would give lethal injections or fatal medications only to patients who met certain criteria, including all of the following, and there are four. So the first one is a patient had a serious illness or disability. Second one, the patient was in an advanced state of decline that could not be reversed. The third one, the patient was experiencing unbearable physical or mental suffering. And the final one, the patient was at the point where natural death had become reasonably foreseeable. So that was the foundation, again, in 2016. So fast forward a few years, there were more legal challenges brought to this law in order to actually expand it. So in 2021 in Canada, the criterion for the patient being at the point where natural death had become reasonably foreseeable was removed. So that requirement was ruled on by the Superior Court of Quebec in 2019 and became law in 2021. So to be clear, you still had to have an incurable disease, but it wasn't necessarily terminal. It wouldn't necessarily end in the patient's death.
And what we can see here is when you listen to the 2016 law that was passed in Canada, I don't agree with that as a Christian, but there was a measure of reasonableness to that, right? Mm-hmm. Where you could sort of get there logically and say, okay, there's these four criteria, they have to be met. But like so many things, once the foot was in the door for this issue, the once there was a crack in the dam, the potential for the whole thing to explode was there. And really, it was this phrase, and in the original 2016 law, this is the phrase that I'm the most uncomfortable with, reasonably foreseeable.
Right.
Because that introduces a level of subjectivity into the question, well, what does that mean?
Certainly. Yeah, so the process required two assessments of eligibility by healthcare providers, and then also a minimum of a 90-day assessment period for a patient. So that happened in 2021. Then Canada has gone even farther. The next proposal announced to expand MAID to patients whose sole underlying condition is mental illness. Then it became about...
Really scary.
Yeah, it became about it doesn't have to be a physical thing where you will die. Now, I think there was some discomfort on this in Canada because earlier this year, the federal government announced plans to delay the MAID eligibility for mental illness until next year. So they kicked it down the road by 1 year. So if you think about this, this is actually pretty striking. So I read an article written in Reuters. It was entitled, "She's 47, Anorexic, and Wants Help Dying. Canada Will Soon Allow It." This was published in July of this year. So the subject of the article was a 47-year-old woman. She struggled horribly with anorexia for years. She said she's had a disordered relationship with her body since she was 8. She's tried all kinds of treatments. Nothing has helped. She weighs 90 pounds. It's so sad. She's just tired of suffering. And so as soon as that provision is allowed by the Canadian government, she plans to apply for assisted suicide. Mm-hmm. So obviously, you know, you could say, what are some of the dangers in this law? And there's a tremendous danger of a slippery slope. You can see that only since the year 2016, it's only 7 years later, and already a bunch of the provisions have been changed.
Yeah, and basically what is happening in Canada is, as soon as the assisted suicide law has moved away from pure physical things,
right,
something that's objective like cancer, and it moves toward something that may have an objective basis with some mental health conditions for certain, but also so subjective that really it becomes up to a person to say, do I want to live or do I want to die? And if I want to die, I have the right to die. Now, here we have to pause and say, no society that I'm aware of, perhaps there have been some, have ever believed that it is within an individual's right to determine whenever they want, if they want to die. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that there are some things, like I didn't research this before, but I know ritual suicide in Japan has been a thing, mm-hmm. yep. over honor and that sort of thing. But right. even within that context, there was specific parameters that had to be met. It wasn't something you just did anytime you felt like it. Mm-hmm. But now Canada is moving to a place where, and you know, I hear 90 days, that makes me like, that is not a long time to make the most important decision of your life.
Literally.
Literally.
Yeah. And I think when you think about people who are suffering from mental illnesses being allowed to apply, how do we differentiate between those whose lives could be improved with treatment? I mean, we've all gone through seasons of our lives where for 3 months things have not been good, right? You know, so how do we differentiate between people who really could be improved, whose lives could really be improved with treatment? I think that's one of the issues that people are...
Huge question.
Yeah, that people are raising. So,
let's step back a moment, Beth, because I want to ask you this question. How do we even get here? How's it even possible that we've arrived, and I mean Western societies. Canada is more progressive than the U.S., but mm-hmm. not a ton more progressive than the U.S. We could certainly see this happening in states in America. In fact, there may already be some laws on the books that are not this drastic, but that lean in this direction.
Yeah.
So how do we get here?
Yeah, I think that goes to what David Brooks is bringing in this article. So I do want to say this is a great article in The Atlantic. Again, it's entitled The Canadian Way of Death. And David Brooks brings two different categories for us to think through this topic. So he brings something called autonomy-based liberalism and gifts-based liberalism. I think it's kind of clunky. Sorry, David Brooks. I mean, I don't really have the right to critique his work, but...
Are you calling me a liberal, Betts?
Yeah, I think
what does this word mean?
I think the terms are a little bit of a mouthful, but it's good. Yep, so let's figure out what it means.
Well, we need to know what liberalism, classical liberalism, what that means.
We're not talking about conservatives versus liberals in the U.S. and in 2023. That's not what we're talking about. So Wikipedia, where we go to answer all questions at this point in our lives, Wikipedia defines liberalism as this. Liberalism is a political and moral philosophy based on the rights of the individual, liberty, consent of the governed, political equality, right to private property, and equality before the law. So the fundamental liberal ideals are things that we all take for granted at this point: freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, separation of church and state, right to due process, and equality under the law. So that is what the term liberalism actually means, and that's how David Brooks is using
it. Classical liberalism is what American society is built on.
Exactly.
Individual rights, the government or the state or whoever's in charge can't just do whatever they want.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so one of the fathers of this line of thought is a man named John Stuart Mill. That might ring a bell from like high school civics or something, you know? So he was living in the mid 1800s, and he wrote a book extremely influential called On Liberty. And he wrote it with his wife, Harriet. And Harriet, interestingly, had a terminal illness. So I think that was a good way that David Brooks tied him into this discussion. But anyway, here we go. So this is a quote from David Brooks about this book and the ideas that the Mills had as they thought about liberalism. So individuals, the Mills argued in their book On Liberty, have the right to be the architect of their own life, to choose whom they marry, where to live, what to believe, what to say. The state has no right to impinge on a citizen's individual freedom of choice, provided that the person isn't harming anyone else. So the liberalism that the Mills has championed is what we enjoy today as we walk down the street and greet a great variety of social types. It's what we enjoy when we get on the internet and throw ourselves into the messy clash of ideas. So that is the basis of liberalism, is that we all have the ability to make choices for our lives, and the government doesn't tell us what to do, basically.
Yeah, makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So what David Brooks is saying in this article is that, as so often happens in the human world, good ideas are taken to their extreme, right? So what he is saying is that Canada's MAID law is a perfect example of how a good idea in classical liberalism is taken to the extreme. So here's where he starts talking about autonomy-based liberalism and gifts-based liberalism. So I'm going to tell you what he means by that. And autonomy-based liberalism really has become the prevailing notion of the West. So as we read a little bit about that, I think you're going to recognize our culture in it. So this is what he says. Autonomy-based liberalism starts with one core conviction. I possess myself. I am a piece of property that I own. Because I possess property rights to myself, I can dispose of my property as I see fit. My life is a project that I am creating, and nobody else has the right to tell me how to build or dispose of my one and only life. The purpose of my life in this version of liberalism is to be happy, to live a life in which my pleasures, however I define them, exceed my pains.
Now, just to pause here for a second, I feel like a lot of Americans would hear that and agree with that.
Absolutely.
If I just read that with no context to this broader discussion, I just said, what do you think of this understanding of life? I think a lot of people would say, yeah,
absolutely,
sign me up for that. Yeah. I totally agree with that.
For sure. I think that really fits where we are as a culture. And that's not, you know, there's a lot in that that's good.
Sure.
That we, you know, that we have freedom, and that's a good thing. So, all right. So the second category of liberalism that David Brooks wants to highlight is called gifts-based liberalism. Okay. So this is what he says. It starts with a different core conviction. I am a receiver of gifts. I am part of a long procession of humanity. I have received many gifts from those who came before me, including the gift of life itself. The essential activity of life is not the pursuit of individual happiness. The essential activity of life is to realize the gifts I've been given by my ancestors and to pass them along, suitably improved, to those who will come after. Our individual choices take place within the framework of the gifts we have received and the responsibilities to others that those gifts entail. So you can hear the difference there, right?
Yeah, I love the way that that definition differs from the autonomy-based liberalism.
How so?
Because notice that in that one, first of all, I have responsibilities, which you don't really hear that in the other one. The other one is more like, I can do whatever I want. I have responsibilities. I'm also connected to other people, whether I want to be or not. I'm the receiver of a heritage of, and then of course, my favorite part is that we start as receivers. The very first notion of the whole philosophy is I'm a receiver before I'm a consumer or I'm a free individual. I'm someone who has been given so much, including life itself. And the connections to this for a Christian are so obvious, right?
Right. Oh, yeah.
God is our creator. We're made in his image. We begin as receivers. I think that's a huge distinction that he makes there.
So he does tie this, obviously, into the discussion on the Canadian law. So he goes into next, he goes into four truths that gifts-based liberalism embraces and autonomy-based liberalism subverts. Okay, so he's going to give us four arguments for why a gifts-based approach to your life is better. Okay, so number one, you didn't create your own life, which seems pretty basic. You know, that seems kind of like, well, yeah. But when you stop and think about it, it is true that, as you said, we are receivers from the very beginning. We don't, you know, we do nothing to come into existence. We're given life.
Yep. So starting out with that premise, hey, the fact that I exist is a gift. I don't have to exist. The fact that I exist is a gift. Yeah.
And as even we were talking about this morning, the human instinct really is to lengthen our lives,
survival.
To see how long we can live.
Survival is the human instinct.
Yeah, did you want to share with our listeners what you shared with me this morning?
What was that? I don't...
The guy who was it like in the tank?
Oh, yeah. So there's a guy, he was an entrepreneur. He lives in Utah somewhere, and he's worth a couple $100 million. So what he's done is he's dedicated, and he's like 45 or something like that. He's dedicated his entire life, his entire existence to not dying. No, seriously. I saw him with a shirt on that said, don't die, which is ridiculous. But basically his goal is to see the absolute maximum length of time the human body can live. So he takes like 200 pills a day.
Wow.
He has a whole team, you know, the guy's worth hundreds of millions. So he has a whole team of doctors. He never puts anything in his body that's not told to him by doctors. Everything he eats, the amount of sleep he gets, he's getting all these treatments, laser treatments, skin treatments. He works out this set amount of time, 7 days a week. It honestly sounds crazy.
That's really funny. Your life is just about not dying.
It's like about not dying.
But is it about living?
He's divorced. He's got a couple kids. He's divorced. But he's like, yeah, no one's ever going to date me ever again. Because
that sounds pretty
bleak. Yeah, but basically he's trying to cheat death by living as long as he possibly can.
Well,
you know,
yeah. So that guy there illustrates the point that life is sacred and we do want to live longer. I mean, that guy is obviously an extreme. Because
that guy won't eat a cookie.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like his life is very much fun. But
no.
All right, so back to David Brooks. So first truth, you didn't create your life. Second truth, which I find great, you didn't create your dignity. Okay, so he gives us a great quote that kind of highlights some of the issues that they're dealing with in Canada. So here we go. Once made administrators, so the people who were making decisions about whether or not people are eligible for assisted death, once made administrators began making decisions about the life or death of each applicant based on the quality of their life, they introduced a mode of thinking that suggests that some lives can be more readily extinguished than others, that some lives have more or less value than others. A human being who is enfeebled, disabled, depressed, dwindled in their capacities is not treated the same way as someone who is healthier and happier. When such a shift occurs, human dignity is no longer regarded as an infinite gift. It is a possession that other humans can appraise, and in some cases, erase. Once the equal and infinite dignity of all human life is compromised, everything is up for grabs. Suddenly, debates arise over which lives are worth living. Human dignity, once inherent in life itself, is measured by what a person can contribute, what level of happiness she is deemed capable of enjoying, and how much she costs.
Yeah, wow. That's crazy.
That's pretty dark.
That gets into some really scary things that our society says that we reject. We say that we reject eugenics. We say that we reject these ideas that some people are more valuable than other people.
That's right.
But this shows that that whole foundation is built upon a Christian worldview that says that people, every person has inherent dignity, no matter what your capacities are. Mm-hmm. This, by the way, we need to do something on this, but there in a lot of Western nations, there's no longer kids born with Down syndrome, how that's just going away. And in fact, in some Scandinavian nations, the kids with Downs is like very, very small because every kid with Down syndrome is aborted now. So this is the world that we inhabit now, but it's crazy that this, whether this approach realizes it or not, it's putting value, it's saying that this anorexic woman is worth less than another person.
That's right.
And really brilliant philosophers who I don't agree with at all, people like Peter Singer at Princeton, he argues very openly and very logically. He says that basically we should assign the value of all life on a utility basis. And he says humans are no different from any animals. So in his view, a newborn baby is, now I might not get this exactly right if Peter was in the room, but it's similar to this. This is the kind of argument that he would make. Like a disabled baby is worth less than an adult cow because he would see that child, it cannot take care of itself. It is medically very expensive, right? That child costs a lot of money. It's a completely utilitarian, and he actually argues, I think he's supported euthanasia for years.
Wow.
He thinks that there should be a time where people are just killed, I guess, or allowed to die because when you go down this path where dignity is not inherent, but dignity almost has to be earned or kept.
Right.
It's pretty scary.
So. Well, and in the article, David Brooks talks about a man who felt like he was being pressured into assisted death because of how much his health care was costing. And, you know, that's a reality. Like, if it's an option, maybe I'm made to feel like I should take it. So when you remove that very fundamental, every human life has equal dignity. When you remove that, you open the door to things that are really scary. And I know for a fact that every parent of a special needs child would say, this child has changed my life in valuable ways. And so we are not able to make the judgments of which human lives are worth living and which aren't. Mm-hmm. So, back to David Brooks. He's told us you didn't create your own life. You didn't create your dignity. Number three, you don't control your mind. So what does he mean by that? He means that we aren't purely rational people. And oftentimes in our lives, this is quoting David Brooks, we're just not thinking straight, especially when we are sick, in pain, anxious, or depressed. So again, that goes back to the, you know, we all go through dark periods. Does that mean that we should end our lives because we're going through a dark period?
Exactly. So this is the point he's making. A person who's having suicidal ideation, you're not thinking clearly. If anybody's listening to this podcast and you want to end your life, get help. Mm-hmm. You are not thinking in the way that you would be thinking if you're in a completely healthy place. Maybe you know that, but it's just a recognition that we can't. And here is where our secular culture is deifying, again, the individual in our own brains and saying, well, whatever my brain is telling me right now has to be true. Instead of let's go to objective standards. let's go to for all human history, societies have said that death is not something that we should choose on our own, but we should allow providence in life mm-hmm. circumstances to dictate, and God ultimately when that comes upon us. Mm-hmm. So this is basically saying that people who, and it's interesting, they're going to allow mentally ill people to make this decision, even recognizing that they're mentally ill.
Right. I think just because the idea is, well, that's compassionate because they're suffering. But then the question becomes, well, what if they would get treatment and improve? So anyway.
Yep.
Well, the final truth that he brings is that you did not create your deepest bonds. So I think his point here is, you know, you're connected to history. You're connected to other people. No one is truly on an island. And we're not truly autonomous individuals. We have all these family bonds and connections that tie us to other people. And I think he makes a strong case for what he's calling gifts-based liberalism. And this is what he says. Thanks to this procession, what he means by that, the procession of human history where so much progress has been made. Each generation doesn't have to make the big decisions of life standing on naked ground. We've been bequeathed sets of values, institutions, cultural traditions that embody the accumulated wisdom of our kind. The purpose of life in a gifts-based world is to participate in this procession, to keep the march of progress going along its fitful course.
As well said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think we've already covered to some degree why we as Christians have a problem with this law. What else do you want to say about that, that we haven't already said?
I mean, there's a lot of different places that we could go with this. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think one thing, Betsy, though, is to say that when we get into why has this law happened, where our culture is at in terms of the expressive individualism and the idea that everything is reduced back to an individual and what you are feeling and what you desire, that there is a certain logic to this. Mm-hmm. It's not a logic that we agree with.
Right.
But if you accept autonomy-based liberalism, which says you owe nothing to anyone, mm-hmm. you're totally within your own rights to do whatever you want with your own body, that this is a logical outcome. And this is something that I would say is not just in Canada, this is in America too.
Sure.
Maybe not the law at this point, but the broader understanding of life.
Certainly.
We see this like a virus spreading all over the place where, again, the whole idea is, well, we have to allow people to do whatever they want as long as they're not harming anyone else. Mm-hmm. That there's a certain logic to that which leads to this moment that we've arrived at with
Absolutely.
Canada.
Absolutely. Right? It makes sense, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you could see how this could be coming to America and the scary implications that it could have.
Yes. Yeah, and I think it goes back to, you know, a topic that we've touched on many times in this podcast. We've even talked about a book called You Are Not Your Own. We are not our own. We don't belong to ourselves. Again, we didn't create our life. We aren't in control of so much of what our lives are. We aren't in control of so many of our lives' circumstances. God is the author of life and death. We are not our own. We're not autonomous creatures with control over our lives. And, you know, that is a lot of pressure that autonomy-based liberalism puts on us, that each individual is supposed to define your own values and make your own choices. That's a lot of pressure.
It is pressure. Mm-hmm. We've also talked about this before, that the idea that we have individual rights and that each person has dignity and all of this, it's all built on a biblical foundation.
Right.
So what is both ironic and tragic here is that the whole impulse of this comes from a biblical foundation,
yes.
that people have value, people have dignity. Everyone is, this is why Christians pioneered healthcare, education, all of these things. And instead of just saying, you know, the rich people and the upper class, they're really matter and everybody else just is a slave to everybody else. We pioneered all this. But then when you remove the biblical truths and the biblical foundations on these things and you allow it to just kind of run wild, this is where you end up with, well, actually, yeah, let's take individual rights and let's take it so far to where people should be able to do whatever they want.
That's right. Yeah, I think another thing it highlights is a view that I think is really common in our culture, that a diseased or painful or almost over life is no longer worth living.
Yeah.
You know, the only lives that are worth living are healthy and happy and productive and making contributions. And, you know, suffering is the signal that something is wrong. And we know in, you know, I don't want to be calloused and say, I know that there are people who are suffering tremendously toward the end of their lives with diseases, and people who are suffering tremendously from mental illness. So I'm not trying to be calloused and say, if you're suffering, it doesn't matter, you know, just gut it out. Anything can be okay with the right attitude. You know, we're not trying to say that. But instead, we look at suffering through the Christian view, which says it's a result of the fall. It's an inevitable part of living in a broken world. An inevitable part of the human experience in our world, and it teaches us something, and it leads us to cling to Jesus in new ways. So I think, you know, there's this whole impulse that we have to be living a certain kind of life to make it worth it, you know, and that's not a Christian idea.
Yeah, and that's actually a pretty recent idea in human history too. Mm-hmm, this idea right. to escape all suffering, mm-hmm. but suffering deepens us as people. Mm-hmm. Suffering changes people. It's incredible. And I could give so many examples here of how people who go through hard things come out different on the other side. So a person who is dealing with a desire to end their own life, yeah, that's horrible. That's not good. We want to see that person get better. And that person, by the grace of God, if they are going to come out on the other side, they're going to come out a deeper, more profound, changed individual as having gone through that experience. That is just the way life works. Mm. So, Betts, I do think in our culture, we should remind our audience that biblically, God, suicide is wrong. Mm-hmm. Suicide is sinful. God does not want us to do it. What would be the biblical reasons for that? I would quite simply say, and there's a lot of different places we could go to in the Bible to show this, but that God alone is the author and giver of life. Mm-hmm. And that is, it is God's decision when we are called to leave this world, when we come into this world, and when we leave this world, mm-hmm. we need to leave those things up to God and trust His providence on those things. Now, there is nothing wrong with, and of course, this is palliative care. When people come to the end, that there's, you know, we're fortunate now to live in a world with good drugs that can lessen pain. Mm-hmm. And there's also nothing that's sinful about a person saying, I want to let this disease run its course. Mm-hmm. I don't believe a Christian is sinning by refusing treatments.
Sure.
Especially you hear about people getting treatments all the way up to the end, even when doctors and people are telling them this is going to be the end for you, and mm-hmm. they're still receiving treatments.
Sure.
Christians should be free of that, free to say, I don't have to receive these treatments if I'm going to let this thing run its course and trust God. Mm-hmm. But it is not within our rights before the Lord to make a decision about taking our own life. Mm-hmm. And it's clear here, you know, you hear the 2016 law, there's some parts of it that almost feel like palliative, but then you can see it moving into the whole, you know, reasonably foreseeable. Well, wait, right. What does that mean? Right. Does that mean I could beat this cancer, but I don't know? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a different question. If there is a possibility of a person recovering from something, then I believe a Christian should pursue that, mm-hmm. pursue that. But there's obviously times where it's clear that a person's not going to recover.
Well, and something this highlights for me is like, wow, we really need people who are believers to be thinking about these topics, to be talking about them. We need people who are believers who are helping to write legislation. Like, we really need, I took a bioethics course at Covenant College, which was fabulous. And that really made me think like, wow, these end-of-life discussions, all of these things are so important for Christians to be involved in.
Yeah, we've got to be thinking about them. We've got to recognize that these laws are, I believe, are going to continue to shift mm-hmm. in this direction. And just to say something about this whole argument of why can't people do whatever they want to do as long as it doesn't hurt anyone else? One of the many flawed premises of that argument is whether you like it or not, what you do does affect other people. Mm-hmm. There's nobody out there that doesn't have somebody who doesn't care about them. And this woman, this 47-year-old anorexic woman, who I hope is not allowed to ever take her life, there are people that value her, that love her, that care about her. She mm-hmm. is not a free agent in the sense that her, and I'm not saying she's not suffering greatly. Mm-hmm. She sounds like she suffered tremendously. I feel so bad for her. Mm-hmm. But we're not totally free to make decisions and think these don't impact anyone else. And I love David Brooks's final, one of the things he said in this article, Betts. I think this is a great way to end this episode. Mm-hmm. What do we say to people who are thinking about ending their own life? And who, there could be somebody listening to this now who is struggling with that, or who has struggled with that, or who maybe will struggle with that at some point in the future, because life is really hard and we go through really difficult things and we face all kinds of trials. So what do we say to that individual who says, well, why can't I just go to Canada and why can't I just do this? And I love what David Brooks says. Mm-hmm. This is so beautiful. And it's 100% biblical, even though it doesn't quote from the Bible. This is what he says. We say to you, the world has not stopped asking things of you. You still have gifts to give merely by living among us. Your life still sends ripples outward in ways you do and do not see. Don't go. We know you need us. We still need you. End quote. Mm-hmm. That's a great call to us all.
That's right. And one last thing that he says that I really appreciated was, gifts-based liberals believe that society works best when it creates ecologies of care that help people address difficulties all along the path of life. So what that is to me is, wow, we really need to be in community alongside each other, taking care of each other, lifting up those who are suffering. That is what we need, and that is how we can find meaning in lives that aren't, you know, the Instagram ideal. And that's how we find meaning and purpose, is when we can come alongside other people and say, we love you, you matter.
You matter no matter what. Mm-hmm. And the best way we can love them is not to say, yeah, this is what you want to do, take your own life, but rather to say, we love you and we're going to stick with you to the end no matter what.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. We know this was a heavy topic, but mm-hmm. we hope this has been helpful to you, and we will see you next time.
Bye-bye.